sending off my camera crew.
All right, I'm recording now.
All
right. Earl, did you have an eBay pick? I added this Sony. I had your Sony article.
I did. I sent the eBay pick on that HP mini computer.
I thought so.
I sent that to one of you guys. Could one of you guys pop that in there for me?
Did you see it, Carrington?
I'm looking. Yes, I got it.
Oh, yeah, I see it.
Hey, no, that's a... No, it's just it's a story.
I got it.
You got the story?
No, I got the eBay thing.
Okay.
I've got it. Earl, there's someone here from your group.
There is?
Yeah, darn it. I mean, I can't think of his name, but I'll find out.
Wait, from which group?
RCX, or the Portland one.
Oh, okay.
He had some pretty nasty things to say about you.
Well, of course.
Okay, good. We're good. All right, so I'm recording, which should probably work like normal. And Karen,
so I'm recording, too, as a backup, just in case.
Okay. Oh, and you're hosting, so you can do all the... Is this show 16?
Yes, it is show 16. I forgot I was hosting, although I put it in the doc. But yes, I can host. I can handle it.
Show 16, you got it right. Okay.
So should we just dive in and make it up as we go?
I think we should.
You lead the way.
Okay.
Actually, wait. Give it just 10 seconds. Hold on. Be right back.
Listen to that background noise.
Bill Degnan.
He's not in here?
Hey, if you guys see Bill, will you tell him to come over here? On the podcast? All right, I'm back.
Okay. Shall we hit it?
Yep, go.
Okay, let's go. Welcome to the Retro Computing Roundtable, show number 16. The RCR is the podcast about computer history, nostalgia,
and... Hey, who's up? Carrington? You got, like, really low all of a sudden.
I am. Did I get really low?
David, can you still hear him okay?
Yes, I can.
I had a volume problem.
Okay, yeah, but we're good on the recording end.
All right, go ahead.
Move your head closer to the headphones.
Okay. Well,
Earl, stop doing that.
I'm sorry. I got to be able to hear you guys. All right, I'm good now.
Okay, let me.
I am good now.
Take two. Okay. Welcome to the Retro Computing Roundtable, show number 16. The RCR is the podcast about computer history, nostalgia, and collecting by us computer historians, hobbyists, and collectors. Thanks for joining us once again as we pull up our chairs to the Retro Computing Roundtable, where we feast on computer news and drink the wine of terribly forced metaphors. For this episode, you are probably going to hear some interesting background noise because the co-hosts are all leading much more interesting lives this weekend than I am, and they are on location. Well, so we will discuss that soon. But first, I'll be playing host, and I'll also be playing Carrington Vanston, a role I first made famous in the off-Broadway play Annie, Get Your Penicillin. So, joining me will be the unusual usuals. First up, we have David Grealish, reader of Stan Beat's History of the Personal Computer audiobook podcast and doer of Daring Deeds. Hello,
hey,
David.
Hey, Carrington. Yeah, I once saw another guy play Carrington Vanston, and you could improve your game.
I understudied to him, actually, and learned a lot about myself.
How's it going?
Give us a hint. Where are you right now?
Oh, you know, I should be able to tell you exactly. We have one of the organizers here. Jason, this is the Heron. What's the name of the building?
The Heron Point Building.
The Heron Point Building in
Fairfield Inn and Suites in Lombard, Illinois.
Yeah, next to the Fairfield Inn and Suites in Lombard, Illinois, which is kind of, I think, in the southwest of Chicago, sort of closer to O'Hare Airport, you know, generally speaking, from the city. It's a very nice venue, too. Really nice building. And we're down, I guess it's safe to call it the basement?
We're in the basement.
Okay.
And it's a very nice building that nobody else knows about. That's why we get so cheap.
Yeah, really great venue. And I'm going to take some video. So, Yep, that's where we are. I am at the Vintage Computer Festival Midwest 6, as well as the Emergency Chicagoland Commodore Convention.
Anything with the word emergency is good. Anything with the word Commodore is bad. Balance out.
Hey now.
Earl, you don't get to talk yet. I haven't introduced you. But let's do that now. So joining me is a man who needs no introduction, so he'll get none. How you doing, Earl?
It's just me. I'm doing well, okay?
Actually, Earl is, of course, famous for the RetroBits podcast and this little RCR thing we're doing. Now, Earl, you too are out there doing daring deeds. Where are you located at the moment?
I'm in lovely and at the moment sunny Portland, Oregon. I'm actually at the Portland Doubletree Hotel, which is just across the river from downtown Portland.
Wow.
And I'm at a exciting event here, the Portland Retro Gaming Expo. I'm currently sitting on one edge of a 17,000 square foot area that is absolutely crammed packed with people and video game artifacts of all kinds. There are cartridges, there are systems, there are things going on. It's just pretty awesome.
Well, that's very exciting. So we sort of have dueling events going on this weekend, and it's quite amazing that both of you could attend something while I sit here in Toronto doing none of that.
I know.
I don't know what to say. I'm speechless.
So I'm also going
to... We don't want to be you either.
Yes, I'm going to let the audience know, though, that this will be a much shorter show than usual, partly because... try to fit things into these two events. We have a limited window for recording, partly because Earl is on battery and it is tick, tick, ticking down, and that will also limit how much time we have to record. So we are going to be flying through, and I will be quite the Canadian taskmaster, which you might think is an oxymoron, but no. So
Carrington, wait, Carrington?
Yes?
I have a last-minute announcement.
With your last-minute announcement.
Here in Lombard, Illinois, I'm not going to go through all that. We are just joined by another original RCRer, Mr. Bill Degnan.
Hi.
Hey, Bill.
Hello, Bill.
Yeah, good to hear you.
So he's going to join us.
Well, fantastic.
He can cut in where I cut out.
So, Earl, I would like to point out that the score now is 2-1 for David's event.
Oh, I can drag people in.
This is a competition.
I'm sitting right next to the Commodore Computer Club booth, and we'll be happy to drag over my buddy Sean to talk a little bit here in just a few minutes. But Carrington, you're the man, so let me hand it back to you.
I am indeed one of the men. So we're going to dive into the news. I'm going to keep both of you on your toes because I think I'm going to mix up the order a little bit from what has been thrown into our show notes. So everybody, stay with me. I thought the first thing we should discuss is one of the last things that's been added to this PET disc, which, David, I believe you put that on our list?
Yes, I did.
So, David, tell me a bit about the PET disc.
Well, it was designed by, now I'm sitting here looking because I don't have Mike's last name, but
scramble,
Mike.
Scramble, scramble, scramble.
Yeah. Why'd you do that to me? But basically, it's a storage device for Commodore PET computers. It attaches to the PET's IEEE 48 port, and it uses a micro SD card. So I got one of these from Mike, and then he was gracious enough to send one here to the event to be given away in a drawing. So I had just given my presentation, and then we had a drawing and gave one away. And then after this, I'm going to go around to some PETs and use mine for the first time. So it's a really neat device, and there's a few other of such devices here. Bill, you just bought one from Jim Brain.
Right, I did.
Another sort of SD. Go ahead.
Jim, I don't have the device name right in front of me, and if you give me a second, I'll run over and go grab
okay.
it.
Yeah.
But it's got more firmware, and it's got certainly more to it than just the device, the PET disc.
But yeah, it's for Commodore 64.
And it gives you the ability, in a nutshell, to plug a drive from a Commodore computer of any type, including the B series IEEE and a bunch of all your standard 1541 class drives directly into a computer so that you can archive any kind of diskette directly right into your computer by just using DOS commands. And you can even write batch files to just, do a copy, hit the pause key when the next disk is in there, hit it again, and you can archive dozens of disks in the time that it would have taken to do one disk. So it's called the Zoom Floppy. Jim Brain's Zoom floppy.
Yeah, I'll put that. I'll put that in the show notes. And
I'm
of course,
sure, I'm not sure if it's Jim specifically or if it's.
It's a design that he got. I remember the guy who did the original design.
Right. I'm gonna go grab.
The
it.
Links will be in the show note. And back to. So I don't have Mike's last name actually because he was just Mike in his email. But he's Bitfixer. So his product is called Pet Disc, and of course those links in the show notes too.
Well, I think Mike, like people like Cher and Napoleon, really only need the one name once they reach this level of production.
Yeah, so the Zoom floppy is the other one Bill talked about, the USB CBM drive interface.
These sorts of things, I think, are not just a very exciting relatively new turn in using vintage computers. I think it's one of the most important things that's been going on the last few years. These devices and kits, et cetera, that enable the extension of the life of retro computers and things that let you get data into and onto them. And really, without this sort of thing, I think we would be facing a much more difficult time to interact with vintage hardware.
Yeah, we're
I totally agree. I mean, the disk drives are mechanical devices by nature, and you know the electromagnetic part of them tend to decay as well. Not to mention the media is getting both harder to find, and the media from back in the day, you know, its shelf life is long past. So I think these.
But as an electromechanical device myself, I take a little bit of unction to that.
Well, you're such high quality, though, Carrington. I really think you're going to last longer.
I am long out of my warranty period.
The discs themselves, a lot of them are still fine. So especially in the B series line, which is what I'm specializing in archiving, it's a lost Commodore computer generation. I'm really hoping that by archiving these disks and then uploading them to my website, vintagecomputer.net, for people to download, I can reintroduce the B series computer, which was a more powerful computer than the Commodore 64 stock. And it's got a SID chip in it, and it's got a lot of the great things that Commodore wanted to introduce, but right at the time the IBM PC came out, and it got trounced.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's also going to be the opportunity to bring life to computer platforms that may have been lost and forgotten.
And we're going to see a lot more. I mean, we are seeing a lot more of these type of devices, which is only makes things better in the vintage computing arena. And I was going to ask Earl, have you seen? Is there anything like that in the vintage gaming? You know, where you are, such other things like that. I know there are.
Well, the MAME, you know, the whole MAME ROM.
Well, it seems to be that on the vintage gaming consoles, the approach is to have things like mega cartridges that can either through flash memory or through ROM can hold huge amounts of games from the past, and so that tends to both preserve that media and also give you the convenience of having 100, 200 games at your fingertips.
Which is exciting, and on the Mac side, oh my goodness, on the Apple II side, there's a few options like this. My favorite of which is we discussed it, I think, either last episode or the episode before when I was at Kansas Fest, recently released CFFA 3000, which is just a crazily phenomenal piece of hardware and does tons and tons of things for the Apple II. So it's sort of what's going on the Apple II side. Hooray, hooray, hooray. Just want to throw that out with my unbiased opinion.
It's a good thing sitting on the VCF side, because if I was on the ECC side, there's actually like two rooms, so it's not segregated per se, I guess, but it's right next to each other.
Well, this is a very exciting event. There's something special about the Midwest. I'm not sure if you've already touched on this, but the Midwest Computing Festival, Vintage Computer Festival, it's got its own feel, its own people. It's different than the East. And it's different than the West. It's definitely a little bit more on the bench hacking.
Right,
going
you expressed
on
that. Right,
than the other two festivals that
now,
are a little bit more.
Since these sort of festivals are divided up into East and West, that kind of stuff, do you have gang signs that you throw down?
He's a comedian too.
No, we do not.
Oh, well, this disappoints me. It's probably why I haven't attended yet.
Yeah, one thing about this event is it seems to be more. It's definitely more workshop kind of.
Right.
Oriented too.
Yeah, you're people working on things, putting them together, and teamwork workshops, which is another important, I'd say, a blowback from what was happening in the homebrew computing clubs and whatnot. That feel is here, where somebody will set up a computer, throw it on a table, and then teams of people will say, "Oh, what are you doing there?" and start pitching in and
I kinda
pushing
think too,
the ball forward a little.
From
bit.
What I know, I've seen about Kansas Fest, Carrington Noma seems like it certainly has a flavor of that too. Like
we'll
be messing around till 11 o'clock officially and probably a little bit later after that.
Right.
Yeah, there's always the official sessions, but many just as much happens in the hallways and stuff between things until late at night. And there's the last one that we were assembling the A2 MP3 card, little hands-on workshop for that and that sort of thing. So yeah, these sorts of events are happening more and more. I find it quite interesting that there seems to be an almost explosion of even smaller scale retro events. What I'm going to do is I'm going to push us on to the next piece of news, actually.
I know Earl
has
limited battery,
Also happening down there in, as us Canadians call it, Illinoisy, but in DeKalb, in Illinois, this weekend, at the Star Worlds Arcade, there is another small retro event going on, basically to celebrate the anniversary of Donkey Kong, where they're having all-you-can-play events and a Donkey Kong tournament, and, in fact, assembling and burying a time capsule. Retro things and taking little videos about and sort of celebrating the first generations to grow up with arcade games and this sort of technology and this sort of entertainment. So it's funny how just there's another one happening in that same state down there this exact same weekend, and there really is an explosion of these sorts of things. We'll have a link in the show notes to that one, but unfortunately by the time the episode comes out, it'll have been over. So I'm sorry we couldn't sort of pre-announce that one from last show.
I went to the website, that's why you heard that. Does anyone know DeKalb, Illinois? How far away is that?
It's about an hour.
About an hour from here? Okay, yeah, it ended at noon today. So, all right.
No, there's events going on right till 6 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. tonight is an all-you-can-play arcade party. But
no, that was last night.
Sold out. Yeah, was that? No, that's Saturday night.
No, it's Friday. It says noon at... Oh, I'm sorry. Maybe you're
uh-huh.
right.
Keep reading. Scroll
yeah,
down.
I'll listen to you. Never mind.
So, but there is, in case people are still interested and want to race out there who are listening right now live, there's a Donkey Kong video game tournament and film festival going on this evening. But still it is.
Okay,
want to also say happy birthday to Donkey Kong, from the Retro Gaming Expo. And tomorrow, one of the gentlemen that I'm hoping to speak with, actually, Gary Kitchen, one of the granddaddies of the gaming industry, and also the person who wrote the 2600 version of Donkey Kong.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very timely. I'll get the chance to chat with him.
That's really exciting, actually. Gary Kitchen is one of the big names, at least for me, when it comes to vintage computers and vintage gaming. Gary Kitchen's Game Maker was also something I owned and played around with and absolutely adored as a child.
Yeah, it'll be exciting to chat with him, as well as David Crane.
Mm-hmm.
Will be here tomorrow also, and I'll have a chance to interview him as well. But, the Donkey Kong connection, we're there. We got it dialed in.
And now I'm just going to touch really quickly on something that sort of relates to something that we spoke about recently, that at these events there's hands-on builds and so many kits available nowadays, that kind of stuff. There was recently an auction for the A2 MP3 card, the same version that we assembled at Kansas Fest. There was an auction on eBay to raise funds for the R. Suinaga scholarship, in the name of Ryan Suinaga, who unfortunately passed away recently. And they were able to raise $237.06 for this scholarship, so that's quite exciting. And unfortunately also leads us to the news in unfortunate passings that Bill Kunkel has passed away recently. So I was saddened to hear that. To me, he was always one of the great early masters of game journalism. So had you guys heard that he had passed?
He was only 61.
Mm-hmm. I believe it was an accident, too. He fell and hurt himself and unfortunately wasn't able to recover. So really, really sad news.
Yeah, the grandfather of video game journalism.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, I was a huge fan of his writing, particularly with Electronic Games Magazine. I mean, he's one of the great, like you said, grandmaster of gaming journalism. So it's a real loss.
Yeah. Sorry to hear that.
It's an unfortunate thing, and it's an unfortunate, I guess, aspect of the hobby that we all skew a little older, and so things happen. I guess it'll happen increasingly, but I wanted to note it because I was always such a huge fan of his writing and thought he was absolutely an incredible talent, so he'll be missed. So let's move on to something a little happier and something that takes us away from you guys and your exciting events that I'm not going to and brings us here to the city of Toronto, the beautiful center of the universe, as it is known. There is a great site, and a sometimes great site called Blog.to, which is sort of a blog about the city of Toronto. And they have put up a really nice series of photographs of vintage computers and technology centered here in Toronto. A lot of it to do with our subway system. So we'll have a link in the show notes. And there's some amazing, amazing shots of rooms full of huge reel-to-reel systems that were mostly used to run the subways because we've had our subway system here for so long. And it's they look like sets right out of, I don't know, a movie.
Oh, look at that thing. Yeah. That's great. The control
Dr. No
station there.
Oh, Dr. No. Great choice. Yes.
$1 million. Oh, yeah. Look at that control room and IBM 360 system.
I mean, it really looks like Colossus. Here we have the system that's going to take over. This is the voice of world control. I mean, just if you're interested in that sort of thing. I mean,
and
this
sideburns.
Yes, and some great big mutton chops almost going on there. So it's just one of those things where I hadn't seen any of these photos. I was really happy to see them because they're based locally for me. But everything from the big steel desks to the huge, you know, walls of buttons and blinking lights, just really, really a nice thing to look at. There's a terrific archive here in Toronto, the Toronto Archives run by the city, and they have been releasing onto the net photographs and documents from years and years ago, just releasing it to the public. And a lot of people have been scouring through and putting up collections based on themes, and so this is the latest one that caught my eye. So really, if you're interested in just some photography of big 1960s technology, big iron, it'd be fun to take a glance at it.
Yeah, very nice. In one of the pictures, the CBC, so is that the Canadian Broadcasting Company?
It is indeed.
Okay. Yeah, these are great. They're very high resolution, too.
Yeah, I think they were promotional photos.
Yeah,
that's why
definitely,
they're a little staged, but
very
they're really clear.
Done.
Yeah. Yeah,
I love this build.
I was involved in a rescue of a UNIVAC, a 1962 1219 system. I filled up an entire tractor trailer and was full of stuff like this, just the UNIVAC brand instead of IBM. Took it all the way from a unidentified military location in Virginia and brought it to the Mid-Atlantic Retro Computing Hobbyist Museum in New Jersey, if anyone's interested to see that, the UNIVAC 1219.
Is there a site on the net that we can get a look at it or see some info?
Well, we don't have it fully documented. I would just suggest going to vintagecomputer.net does have a page on the UNIVAC 1219 if you want to take a look at it. But it doesn't really do it justice. It looks, when I saw those pictures of the IBM, the entire room, literally they brought me into an entire room that had been sealed that was just full of completely attached, hooked up, UNIVAC 1219 system with the tape drives and with all the teleprinters and everything. And they told us we have a certain number of hours to get it out of there before the wrecking ball came. And we had about 15 people just with forklift after forklift just grabbing the stuff and throwing it in the back of an 18-wheeler that I had to end up driving. It was whatever one notch less than the legal size you're allowed to a person's allowed to rent. And we took the entire day to fill this truck up and carted the thing up to New Jersey, but certainly it's quite an experience to see these computers and to get an experience to see them, whether it's a photograph or actually to see them in person. There aren't very many places left to witness them.
And I put a link, of course, to Bill's site as well as another site that had some other interesting pictures.
But we will eventually, March, we'll have those as an actual exhibit. We do have them set up. But I think we're going to take it another step farther and actually try to power some of it.
So this is also an accurate representation of the
proper
one. Okay, because I put that link in. It's pretty interesting looking. That one definitely looks like it should be in a movie. You know, it was in some 60s movie.
Right.
Or something.
It's all very gray.
Yeah.
The link will be in the show notes. Definitely people should go and take a look at that. That's really interesting.
Yeah. Okay.
Wow, nice. Okay, so we're going to keep it going. Taskmaster style. Earl's battery is no doubt ticking down.
26%.
Okay, go. Two more brief things, and we'll get to our auctions. The first I want to take a look at is, I noticed, David, you just clicked on it, the new Sony PSN TOS, or the terms of service. And why has that caught your eye?
Well, that's Earl. Earl, you speak to that.
Uh-huh. That is
his thing.
And, you know, a couple reasons. I mean, one is it's interesting the legal implications of this. Can you sign your right away to litigate on something like this? It kind of reminded me of the advent in the industry of shrink wrap licenses. You know, you install a piece of software, and by virtue of running it, you're saying that you agree to certain legal things, la, 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 la. They don't have your signature. They don't know for sure that you clicked on this. Is it really enforceable? I don't know. I mean, it's also what I think is the latest in a long line of consumer-unfriendly reactions from Sony. It always amazes me the audacity of these guys.
Mm-hmm. Instead of
making something secure where we keep your data private, we'll just try and exempt ourselves from litigation from when we goof up. How do you do that?
And I should mention just for the listeners that the point is, in case people haven't heard, that in the latest terms of service that all of us with PS3s have been forced to agree to if we want to keep playing our games, we are waiving the rights to participate in a class action lawsuit. So if we have any issues, we will have to pay for and sue Sony on our own. We can no longer just gather together and say, hey, you screwed all of us en masse, so en masse we have a problem with it.
Guys, there's an interesting development. I just found this just in. Sony has announced that they are canceling all hardware. They are no longer going to make any hardware of any kind. So,
wait, is that true?
No.
I'm like, you sound
like... Find me a laugh. No,
I'm kidding. They're still making the Walkman. These guys don't let go of anything.
I thought I'd make a little, slight HP reference there, but... Yeah, I mean, making some stupid decisions, sort of like HP.
But I'm also completely
ruining their business.
I have, from the beginning, been very upset at the idea of shrink wrap licenses and the idea that I pay for something, the transaction's complete, they took my money, and then 2 days later, when I open up the box to go install it, they say, oh, by the way, these are our terms. Well, that doesn't seem reasonable at all to me.
Right.
And has never seemed reasonable, and I've never understood how that can be reasonable.
And you don't own it, you own a license to use it, as long as we say you do.
And that's increasingly the case. We don't own music anymore. It's always sort of, in fact, I've always been surprised that companies like Apple, and I'm the biggest Apple fanboy there is, but that I can go on the iTunes store and click a button that says buy or purchase to get music. Because the license term tells me I'm not owning it, that I'm not buying it. I'm simply licensing it. It seems to me that to say buy or purchase on Amazon or iTunes would seem to be completely misrepresenting the terms of the sale.
I never really thought of that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Let's bring them down. Class action style. Oh, we can't.
They must pay. Yeah.
And it kind of took me back to the day. I remember Borland's license agreements for things like Turbo Pascal and Quattro Pro and those kind of products. They were always so common sense. They said, you can use this software on as many computers as you want, as long as you're the guy who bought it and you only use it on one computer at once. We're not going to put copy protection on any of this stuff. We're just going to trust in, your better angels are going to guide your use of the software. I always loved that. It made me love Borland. On the other side, Ashton Tate's license agreement for things like DBase always looked like something like, the sum total of U.S. legal decisions in the entire history of the U.S. And you had to read this thing that was 97 paragraphs long and then click OK. You don't even know what you're clicking OK to because it's too long for any mortal to read. It always gave me a bad taste in my mouth of Ashton Tate. I don't know how that translates into ultimate sales or the longevity of a company, but I know who I felt better about.
Absolutely.
And so that comes to today and things like this thing with Sony. So I thought it was relevant. It reminded me of the past and also kind of what's going on today.
Well, this takes you all the way back to Bill Gates' open letter to hobbyists.
Yeah.
And it's really just a continuation of that theme that the producers of software or the producers of music or the producers of anything need to make a living in order to encourage them to want to make the software that encourages them to improve it and support it. So,
and I'm totally in favor of that. In favor of that original purpose of copyright. I just think, take that letter, for example, that open letter to hobbyists. I agree with a lot of the information that Gates put forward in that letter way back then. But the way in which he did it placed him in a confrontational relationship with some of the people who are using the software. And so you got to kind of weigh the balance of not just what do I want to say to people, but how do I want to say it? How do I want to present it?
Well, he was speaking out directly to piracy. Which
actually, he was speaking directly to me. A lot of people don't know that letter was actually sent to me.
No, I didn't.
And I have not changed my ways, Bill. You know why?
Well, they at the time, software was hardware. Software was thrown in with the hardware, and I'm sure as many of you here know that. I mean, but it was
well, not back.
This was the beginning of commercialization of software on a microcomputer.
Well, actually, that didn't happen until, that I know of, bundling until the Osborne One in 1981.
No, they had commercial. You had to buy paper tape software from MITS in order to run
BASIC. Oh, yeah, right. But you had to buy it, yeah.
And I know that you were going to talk about that as an auction. Isn't that an auction on eBay? Isn't there an original copy of MITS paper tape BASIC?
I think there has been one. It's not one of our things right now.
It was one of our choices last week, actually, or last episode.
Oh, was it?
That might actually
act as
a good segue. I think we should be heading on to our... I mean, I hate to cut things short, but I know that batteries are dwindling. So there's our segue.
I do, by the way, have a copy of the
eBay auctions. Yeah. Now, last time around, we actually had a guest on. We had Kevin Savitz on, and Kevin chose the 1989 Prodigy Interactive Personal Service Startup Kit, and then just glancing over to see if it ended up selling. Oh, and last time as well, we were trying to select our auctions from the Vintage Computer and Gaming Marketplace. So this auction closed, and I have no idea whether or not it sold. I find this site very difficult.
This is our thing. Does it sell or what?
It may or may not have sold. Nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
It just, I mean, it has one quantity, so I would assume it didn't sell, right? Because there would be zero quantity left.
Is that how this works?
I don't know.
Nobody knows. So anyway, he selected it. We don't know what it was going for. We don't know whether it sold. This was an excellent idea, choosing auctions from this site. And David, last time around, what did you choose? I believe it was a laptop,
Nixdorf.
Right?
Nixdorf,
right.
It's closed. Again, it does, You see, it got no bids in this case, so I guess that.
Okay,
one,
how do you know it got
that?
No bids? Oh, number of bids.
Why would anybody have that?
Oh, it's just because I thought it was interesting.
Okay, fair enough.
Do not judge us.
You know what Nixdorf was famous for?
What?
Nothing. They sound kind of like something else.
Our German listeners are gonna send your comments to Bill Degnan.
286 from 1989. So you've got.
Don't bring down
that.
The level of the show, Bill. That's my job.
All right, so now it's the MITS Altair.
This guy, every week he puts up another copy of this. He actually makes new copies.
Is this Eric Klein?
And actually prints them out on his teletype and just has been dishing
them
out.
Is it Eric Klein?
I don't know. I guess
Eric with a K.
But I guess Eric's been dishing these out for months.
It says Eric. I don't know if it's Eric Klein, the guy who actually runs the site, but could be.
And I know that Bill Gates wrote him a letter about this.
Yeah.
It wasn't a licensed copy. But I actually have the license from this BASIC. I actually have a legal copy of MITS BASIC. I have the actual original print. Somebody actually pay the money once for this. Yes, it is possible.
Cool.
Okay, so we've moved on to that one. The Earl, that was your choice last time around, the MITS BASIC.
Oh, so Infocom did.
It also got no bids, but again, like we had discussed last time, it was just a copy, and not even a copy was tested.
Good picking, guys.
So, yeah.
Okay, so the next one is yours, Carrington, the Infocom.
And mine.
That one was a bargain, pretty much.
I suppose so. Yeah, it was a copy of that caught my eye. A copy of sealed, still complete in box copy of Deadline, the original one from Infocom. It sold. It got 9 bids. Sold for $51, and it was only $10 shipping. So for this sort of thing, it's gotten quite collectible. The box wasn't in the best of shape, but it's one of the more collectible Infocom games. So
it was Invincible.
My problem with it was the disc itself inside was in really rough shape, but the packaging contents for just a collector trying to get a complete system. We're in relatively good shape, the internals, the feelies. So, but as we can see, once again, I seem to have won the auction competition. And it's only a competition because I seem to have won.
If it was sealed, how did it get open?
Well, that's the problem. It's complete inbox. It wasn't sealed, sorry. It was just a complete inbox version, but it did have all the feelies. So wasn't in the best shape, but one that's in perfect shape will go for far more than this. So get your bargain if you want to play the original version with a box. So this time around, guys, I guess I'll go first. I have selected something that I spotted on the A2 Central site, actually. It's an electric three-wheel custom-built car. It runs on batteries. A whole bunch of batteries. And
someone actually left their topper on the ground in this photo.
It has an Apple IIc computer on board. It's... it's different. It was registered and officially licensed as roadworthy in the California.
That's actually homemade, isn't it?
In the 90s, it was three-wheeler, so it's registered as a motorcycle. You need a motorcycle license to ride it. But yeah, it's a completely homemade battery-run car. Runs on a whole bunch of batteries. 16 lead-acid golf cart batteries. All of which are dead, so you have to supply your own new batteries.
I wonder if that car was based on – there was a somewhat famous like three-wheeled car in the late 80s or early 90s. You guys familiar with that at all?
I am not.
I'm just doing a quick search.
Cars very well. What I liked about this and what links it into the RCR is it has built into it an Apple IIc computer, which, of course, any exciting car from the early 90s should have had. So as you're driving around in your custom homemade built three-wheel battery-run car with a 2C, you can just imagine how the ladies will turn their heads.
And they'll have to pass laws against not looking at your 2C while driving. That should be banned, Carrington.
Absolutely, but it's got the old Apple monitor mounted right there on the dashboard.
It doesn't matter because it probably goes about 5 miles an hour or so.
So, but if you're looking for something right out of, I mean, to me, it's a very 80s looking vehicle, but it was registered back in the 90s. It's still got a couple days to go on the auction. Current bid is only $207.50, but it hasn't met the reserve. So we'll see if it actually goes. So that is my choice of auction to watch for next episode. Earl, what have you got for us?
I've got actually an HP mini computer. And part of the reason that I picked this is that I know almost nothing about it. I'm very interested, though, in big iron just in general. And I noticed this particular model was in really good condition. And I thought that for something of this time period, in this good condition, actually certified working for the price that they're asking for it, which is a buy it now of $799 with $100 shipping, seemed very reasonable to me. Now, again, I'm not an HP expert. In fact, I would say that the mini computers of this era from HP are something of an enigma to me. And I may actually do a little bit more research on this in the future, possibly even factor it into a RetroBits podcast. But I'll be fascinated to see whether or not this sells. Mm-hmm. And also, I just loved looking at the photograph here and the write-up, actually, if you guys happen to look at that.
It's, yeah.
The history of this computer was pretty fascinating as well. It was involved in, let me see, I'm having a little bit of trouble with my browser here, but I think it was involved in the development of the F-16.
Right, Fighting Falcon by General Dynamics in the late 70s, it says.
Mm-hmm. So not only is the computer interesting to me because I love the big iron stuff, but the particular lifetime of this specific one I thought was fascinating. Again, I'll be interested to see if it sells. And okay. I've got to do a little bit more research, too, on the organization that's selling this, because they seem to have a website where you can go and look at information on some of the old vintage systems as well. And I haven't encountered that particular website before. So look for that in a future either RCR or RetroBits.
Oh, let me let Bill in here.
Well, I just wanted to make one comment about this machine. This is one of the ones where the early peripheral devices with the front panels enhancement systems were created so that you could inject memory into the system beyond what was offered by the front panel, which was a precursor to the reason why you had an Altair with a front panel and some of the early computers had front panels. The add-on front panel industry was popular with the Hewlett-Packard people because, for whatever reason, either was a synergistic thing or it was a need to be able to do support for the IBMs and some of the other systems that didn't have as robust of a front panel. And that technology merged together with the microprocessor is what caused a lot of those early microcomputers such as the Altair to have a front panel and the logic and reasoning behind it. So if you wanted to find some reason why this would be historical, it was part of the influence of the front paneling system.
Very interesting.
And another thing I noticed about this particular system, it says it was one of the first models with semiconductor memory as opposed to core memory. Hmm. So it was also significant.
And in the 70s, though, that seems kind of late, but okay.
Yeah, I would have thought so, too, but still a really interesting choice, Earl. Nice.
Cool.
I applaud your choice of auction list. David, what do you have to compete with the Big Iron or my three-wheel ridiculous car?
Well, frankly, since I hadn't had time to really pick one, just
I want
my presentation.
David, I want auction wowness.
It's not too wow, but it's a favorite of mine, so I thought I'd stick. I just go with something like that. So it's a Lisa computer. This particular one has 2 days, 18 hours left. It's in. I don't know why it keeps collapsing. That. Let's see. Where is it? It's in New Rochelle, New York. Too far from Bill here. So it says Lisa computer working, sort of. It says sort off actually.
So in other words, it's sort off.
So, you know, not the best Lisa computer, but it says Apple Lisa computer was used for development work on early Mac programs. Been sitting in my parents' garage for the past 20 years. It boots, but cannot find the hard disk or read a Mac Excel floppy. Actually, the fact that it just boots is pretty good. If you can get it for a couple hundred bucks, it's worth it. But you need a keyboard. It includes a new mouse, so any Mac mouse. So, you know, this could be a good, you know, if someone picks it up cheap, it could be a good project computer.
And the keyboards are easy to come by.
Do you think so?
Not for the Lisa.
Well, here in Toronto, there's a – okay, so if somebody purchases this relatively near the Toronto area, there's a big stack of keyboards for the Lisa and early Mac keyboards at Above All Electronics.
You
got to
buy them and start selling them on eBay.
Bathurst.
Huh? They'll sell for $100 a piece in good shape.
It's a great site. Above All is just a fantastic surplus electronics place that often in the back just has heaps, just piles of vintage computer stuff.
Yeah. You know, Carrington, Toronto rocks.
Toronto does rock.
I'd like to add that Toronto is well represented here at the ECC end.
Oh, really?
Oh, sure, certainly.
There's one group.
T-Pug is the Toronto area whatever it is, but
it's the Toronto Pet User Group.
Yeah, and T-Pug, okay, and they're certainly well represented here. There's a number of pets on display, and that's the driving force behind a lot of this hardware.
And I didn't know if I mentioned this before we started recording or not, but I have a flyer from their table about the World of Commodore 2011 on Saturday, December 3rd, 2011, in Toronto at the Admiral Inn. You know where that is, Carrington?
I'm gonna crash it.
Ontario.
Wearing my Apple shirt.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Why do you hate Commodore?
I don't hate Commodore. I just, have an interesting relationship with Commodore.
And so I'll put that in the show notes. But where?
Well, interesting auction choices all around.
So we'll see what happens to that, Lisa.
It's not going to sell. No, you know what? It's going to sell to somebody who's going to install it in their three-wheel car. This is my prediction.
Or they'll pick it up in a three-wheel
car. That'd be cool.
Actually, I think that that Hewlett Packard 21MX mini computer, that would go great on a car dashboard.
It would, actually. I mean, it's so portable.
All the blinking lights and stuff, yeah. That would be a car dashboard.
And what's another dozen batteries?
Exactly. Give me all your golf carts. I need to rock. Okay, fellows, so let's bring this, as Earl is probably hitting the 2 or 3% left of battery, let's bring this thing to a close. Any closing remarks? Give me a quick summary about how awesome your two respective events are. David, let's start with you. What's been a highlight? How much have you enjoyed the event you're attending right so far?
I've enjoyed it a lot. It's a great venue. It's a good trip. But it's kind of interesting to say because two events, they're together yet. I guess they're kind of separate. Bill's second time here. Or third time?
Second.
Oh, because second time you're here last year. To be honest, though, I kind of misplanned some things. Like I'll talk about later about my book. And we had to run around this morning a little bit. And then I was working on my my presentation. So, frankly, I haven't seen everything yet.
There's
so I'm going to let Bill talk a little
bit. Let's
not
forget there's a Tandy Coco group, one of the most popular Tandy Coco groups in the country. You've got a Sinclair hobbyist group. You've got the Commodore people.
And Michael over there, with he's got a
You've got
crazy
a huge 6502 collection that Mike Lee brought. It's a whole U table. Mike, of course, was the first to smoke. We always make a point to find out whose computer blows up or catches on fire during a computer event. And Mike Lee, he's right over here right now, but he was actually not in
first
the room
to smoke, Mike
when
Lee.
when his computer went up in flames. But it was quickly put out by the Apple people who happened to be there mocking it.
Well, Apple people were there in anticipation of watching
there was a team of three or four people standing by at all times ready for the Apple III to catch on fire because we all predicted that was going to happen, and indeed it did. Although there may have been sabotage with some Commodore people from the other room. We're not sure. A few men were running out the room when we all noticed that it caught on fire.
Mike Lee just brought over a copy of a book called The Gentle Art of Smoking. Is it really an old book, Mike?
It was
published in 1954.
It was presented
English.
To me at VCF East.
Oh, okay.
Cool. Mike is a vet. He also won, and he has his gold ribbon for having a computer light and go up on in smoke on both the East Coast and now in the Chicago area.
And what's your website, Mike?
It's geekmuseum.org.
Geekmuseum.org. So we'll put that in the show notes.
Excellent.
And so I just want to say that, you know, so now, and once the podcast is wrapped up here, now finally I can kind of relax and truly take my time and look at everything here. So I'm obviously here to be a participant and, also enjoy and look around. I did have a chance to buy one thing, Carrington, to let you know, because, you know, I'm one of your biggest fans before we ever collaborated. I got a copy of Task Times in Tonetown.
No, fantastic.
So the box, you know, with the newspaper and all that. So
absolutely.
I'm happy to have that.
That was one of the first games I reviewed on 1 MHz, I think.
Which I just listened to again recently.
Oh, foolish. Foolish. Move on.
I love
so,
you, man.
Earl, I would like to point out that now that Mike's been on the Mike, David's event is now winning 3-1. Just saying.
Well, I think I'm going to have to concede this one to David, due in no small part to my diminishing battery life. I will say I'm having a great time here at the Retro Gaming Expo. There are more cartridges here in one place than I think I would see in 10 lifetimes. And it's so interesting to see everybody having a fun time. The standing arcade games over in one section are, of course, heavily attended. There are tournaments going on here. There are presentations about various aspects of gaming. Of course, all of the booths where you could buy, you could spend 15 small fortunes here. I think maybe even Bill Gates could significantly deplete his mega fortune here. But so far, great time being had by all, and I'm happy I'm here.
We're getting some good
video footage, too.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and I personally wound up finding a VIC-20 Programmer's Aid cartridge. I know compared to gaming stuff, that's kind of boring. It's very highly sought after VIC-20 cartridge, always a bidding war on eBay. I got one for a steal here.
Nice.
And I'm very happy about that. So, yes, I actually have purchased one thing. I'm not just, Retro Gaming Expo Press, but I'm also a client.
Hey, let me jump in again real quick, too, and yeah, so we'll be really interested to see your video, Earl. And I also videotaped my presentation. I videotaped me giving the presentation. Then I'm going to put that little bit of video within the presentation. So I'll have that this year. But I'm going to start videotaping the show now. And other people are doing this. And so there'll be plenty for us to talk about in future shows with some video and photos and everything we can share about these two events. One other mention about this show. So there's a gentleman across from me. He has a real Apple One here.
Wow.
That he's been demonstrating all day. So, and then Mike Lee, who was just here, he's got a reproduction. He's got one of Vince Briel's ones, but he's got one that's how would you describe it? It's a hardware reproduction.
I think
too.
It's Willigal's, Mike Willigal's kit.
So it looks like the real Apple, but. Yeah. Do you know his name?
No, some guy. Some guy over there.
Anyway, there'll be pictures, so it's pretty neat to see a real Apple One. And in use, it's working. And in fact, he had to fix it, right? Because it's missing its ROM chip.
Yeah, it's a work in progress. He got it for free in exchange for fixing another mic.
Really?
Apple One. He was given to
wow.
him.
Wow.
Here, have
nice.
An Apple One. Here, have your children's education, please. So that's a great thing. We have a Rockwell AIM 65 table. Not that excited, but I just wanted to say that is.
He got it through airport security, believe it or not.
Yeah, I was nervous about that. But bare board systems, yeah.
And I opted out, by the way. You know, the naked search. All right.
I thought that would be part of the show notes next episode.
I was going to post those pictures, but I opted out.
Earl's got his video. I thought that would be yours. I'm jealous, and I'll rise to the occasion. I'm sitting here in my house, so what I'll do is I'll just turn on Netflix and watch an episode of The Rockford Files or something and videotape myself, and I'll contribute. So we all have our weekends captured.
Earl, do you have a little more battery life, Earl? Is he gone?
I'm still here.
Do you want to try to do that one last item it looks like we had?
Yeah, what is the last item?
Or did we didn't get that one. Did we, that Ready Player One? Carrington?
Well, I could throw in something really quick about that. That is a book by Ernie Cline that I read recently, and it is fantastic. I mean, yes, it's basically young adult literature. Yes, it's full of some plot holes. Yes, it's a first novel and suffers some of the normal first novel problems. But if you are a fan of vintage computers, vintage gaming, if you're a fan particularly of the 8-bit era, like so either you grew up in or currently are a fan of things of the age of Atari 2600, if you listen to Rush albums, if you liked playing Zork, that sort of thing, this book will make your head explode. Science fiction takes place in the future where almost everybody is hooked up to a virtual reality game all the time, and it's one based primarily on 1980s technology, and it's about a huge worldwide scavenger hunt to get the richest man in the world's fortune, and he's left it in clues where you have to play through real-life virtual reality simulations of 80s video games. It was roller coaster fantastic. Absolutely loved it cover to cover.
That's cool.
Yeah, so just the kind of thing that people that would listen to this show, I think, would really dig this novel. Really, really interesting thing. And if you prefer your books in audiobook format, audiobook is actually read by Will Wheaton. So a really good choice of narrator there.
You guys know who Wheaton is? Of course, Star Trek nerds are also, you know.
it was really fun. I absolutely adored the novel. One of my favorites of the year so far.
All right. Got any last words, Bill?
Throw that dance in the
bonus. No, I don't.
Okay, guys, with Earl's computer about to shut down and everything around David about to catch on fire, I guess we should wrap up the show. Thanks, everyone, for listening and continuing to support the show. It's really appreciated. You can find all the links that we discussed and all the photos and that kind of stuff in the show notes. And if you are a fan of the show, please do as, according to David, we're going to call this two things. First, we'd love to hear about you liking the show, so please email us. You can send email to feedback@rcrpodcast.com. That's number one. Number two of two is help us by rating the show and submitting a review, hopefully a good one, on iTunes. That really helps people find us. And according to David's count, number three of two is you can follow us on Twitter, which is @rcrpodcast.
Yeah, and don't forget this, the number two of two. No, yeah, number three of two, or the second.
Absolutely. In an increasingly inaccurately numbered list of two, those are the three things you could do, and it would really help us out. We really do appreciate your feedback and all that. It's really exciting to get it, so I love it. Thanks a lot for joining me on the show, you guys. Your event sounded really exciting. This was enjoyable, and we will catch you all when we scooch up to the table next time.
Thanks.
All right.
Thanks for having me. Bye, everybody.